Beef, welcome to the podcast, dude.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. Excited to be here, man. We've been waiting for this day for some time.
Yeah, for sure, man. A lot of people don't know this, but 'cause I think I've got this reputation as a kind of like paid ads, like in platform specialist. But I actually started my career out in design agencies and specifically like,
Oh, no way.
So have done more than my fair share of building my own creatives over time. So it's a subject that's pretty close to my heart.
Got the right ingredients for revenue growth. A pinch of effort and a dash of hope won't cut it anymore. Grab your utensils. You're about to get some high-performing marketing recipes. Welcome to Client Boost Kitchen.
Let's go. You know we'll be diving into a lot of these, and we've talked about, you know, some of the topics at length too, and work together to sort of create content around them. So we'll dive a lot into those things. So it's super exciting to just share some of the secret sauce that we've been discovering on the back end here in Client Boost.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. I feel like I'm going to learn something in this podcast here, which I'm super excited about. Beef, before we get into it, why don't you just give the listeners a quick intro to who you are and what you do at KB?
Yes, my name is Beavis. I'm the current director of performance creative here at Client Boost. I've been here for well over 8 years. So sort of learned the ropes on all design fronts, starting from CRO, learning the psychology behind design, and, you know, sort of following user journey and seeing how to convert more people in the door. So then now standing up the performance creative department. So now working mostly with the ads you see when you're scrolling through Instagram and whatnot. So it's been an exciting ride. And it's been this crazy evolution of things that just work out on the things that you see within social. So super stoked to just dive into some of those, the top five today of B2B paid ads creative that we've known to work.
Cool, man. Thank you. Well, with that, so key things that listeners will learn today. So number one, how to improve your paid ads conversion rate with offer alignment. Number two, the importance of regularly testing new ad creative to fight ad fatigue. I feel like I when I first joined KB, spent some time with the sales team, so I had to audit like more paid ads accounts than I can remember. And you wouldn't believe how many companies have had the same creative for like 3 years or something like that. It's insane. And then the final one is, this is actually kind of my favorite one because I feel like this is something that we've been back and forth and a lot on lately, which is why some companies need to throw the brand rulebook out the window to improve performance.
Yeah, throw it out.
Yeah, exactly. So let's start with point number one here. So first one is needing to make sure that the ad to landing page experience isn't misaligned. Beav, do you just want to talk to that a little bit?
Absolutely. This is a big one, a common mistake that we see, especially within B2B, because, you know, two of the biggest offers that we see as a commonplace here is either trial or demo. And you wouldn't believe the amount of times we see an ad that would point to a free trial as a CTA. And then you click and, you know, when you're led to a landing page, then the CTA on the form says book a demo. So that mismatch in language, that mismatch in just the call to action that you're using is going to create confusion, and it's going to create that friction to convert, to close out new prospects and buyers. So the best thing you want to do is always ensure that the language that you're using, there's a message match in between your ad to landing page experience. And the way you could actually realize that this may be happening, that this hiccup is something that you may have on the back end, is if you're seeing click-through rate doing spectacular on the ad front, but you're seeing that conversion rate is super low and it's down, that could potentially be a good indicator that you have a mismatch within your ad to landing page experience. And that's not anything you want to go through, for sure.
Yeah, dude, that's such a good little tip to send people away with. Like, and especially for performance marketers, I think you could easily look at a high click-through rate and think, oh, this is doing what it's meant to do. But actually, that's a good point. If there's loads of people going to the page, yet they're not converting, like, yeah, it's very obvious. There clearly is an issue there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily need to be the CTA per se. Sometimes even the language within the headline copy doesn't match up. So you want there to be some level of consistency in what you're saying. And this is why it's always good to be in tune with your CRO team, your CRO strategists, the ones who are designing and building out these landing pages. Be in tune with your media buyers, your page strategists, whoever you have on the wider team at Whole. You want to make sure that there's an alignment between all parties involved.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's a great tip. So moving on from that, this one's another big one, I feel. So lack of creative diversity in testing equals ad fatigue. You see this all the time, right? I think a lot of campaigns really have, especially with dependent on the audience size, like what, maybe 6 to 12 week shelf life max. And then especially on social platforms, and then you see performance, you know, kind of start dive bombing.
Absolutely. This is what you were alluding to in our intro here, is the fact that when a certain, you know, brand is finding that one sort of formula has been working for them, what tends to happen is they'll repeat that same creative strategy for months on end, right? Without any diversity into the ad creatives that they're running. And just know that that's a recipe for ad fatigue settling in. And if we're not thinking outside the box with sort of the creative strategy that we're running and diversifying as needed, then ad fatigue is definitely going to settle. And we see that across the board with B2B ads coming in, where there's really only one secret formula that they're using and maybe winning for a period of time. But as we introduce, as you know, when we partner up and we begin to introduce creative diversity, we see performance completely through the roof, just because we're giving life now to something that's been stale for some time. So definitely lack of creative diversity and testing will lead to ad fatigue. Don't let ad fatigue settle in. You got to combat that with introducing just more creative strategy into your ecosystem. So, you know, it seems like a general statement, but it's a big one. It's a big one. It's a common mistake, common pitfall that a lot of B2B companies are falling in.
Yeah, for sure. And was there a test I think we did? This is kind of like on the similar front there of just having a more diverse set of creative. I remember seeing something where we ran some tests where we used more creative formats and more like varieties of creative. I think it was either on social, it was either on Facebook, or it was either on PMax or something like that. And ended up seeing a huge lift in conversions as well, just from having that kind of creative diversity.
Absolutely. So creative diversity comes in many ways, right? It could be really the creative strategy you're running. It could even be ad format, just knowing that if you're able to provide a surround sound experience with providing ad sizes across, you know, the board within LinkedIn itself, right? You could take advantage of things like document ads and all the other types of ads that are just LinkedIn specific. Even if you, let's say, stick with one creative strategy, if you're able to diversify within the ad format, even in static GIF and video, you'll see better returns on your investment. So definitely diversify any way you can. Get creative with the sorts of design and look that you already have available to you. And it's quite simple for us. The formula is that for any time we're onboarding a new account in the door, we'll start off with 5 different angles right off the gates. And that covers benefits, features, addressing the most frequently asked questions, diving into competitor comparison, as well as some form of social proof. And then based on what's working, we'll start iterating and we'll start to experiment with more expanded versions of the winning formula that we see as well. So yeah, creative strategy. That's a very important one, or diversification. Yeah.
I love that idea of like incremental testing as well. And it's kind of interesting. That's an approach I take to some of the just organic LinkedIn content that we do. And it's so true. I think one thing I've seen is when I find maybe like a hook formula, for example, that works, and I'll try and do multiple posts on it with the same formula, it's like the performance never gets back to exactly the same as the first time I ran that hook, because I feel like you've like fatigued it. But when you vary it in some way and find new ways of saying that same thing, that's when you kind of start to see performance scaling. And there's part of me that thinks there's probably an element of that to the, you know, creative testing as well.
Yes, creative testing and creative experimentation. You'd be shocked at some of the things you'd find. And oftentimes we'll find that the ones that we would presumably count out, you know, we'll take a creative concept that like, yeah, we'll just, this is low lift, let's just go ahead and put it out there. Sometimes those are the winning ads. You just never know, right? So, and we'll come in with the preconceived notions and ideas of what we think may work. A lot of times they tend to be the ones that fail out and those don't work. So it's very important that you experiment and diversify as much as you can.
Yeah. And I love that comment that you made there around a lot of times the one that you want to win doesn't necessarily win. And so I'm going to kind of throw you a curveball here, but I think, you know, when you're running this testing, it's also very, very important to be data driven about it. And so I know that internally you've been developing this kind of concept of the creative boost flow. It's kind of a system that you use for putting together those kind of creative hypotheses and then testing it. Would you mind just talking a little bit about how that works and potentially how listeners could implement a similar sort of system themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. The creative boost flow was our formula that we put together to make sense of creative experimentation at scale. And within our format, what tend to work for us that we've created into what we now produce as Boost Flow is a 4 cycle that we go through, which is the ideation phase, the execution phase, the launch phase, and then the analysis phase. So within the ideation phase, we'll come up with a hypothesis for an experiment. And how we'll go about that is we'll come up with a theme for a round of ads that we'll put together. So for the example of the War Chest of Ads, that's one theme that we can do across 5 different ad angles. Another theme could be persona study, where we'll do a deeper dive into sort of the different audiences that, you know, a B2B product would target. Another theme could be social proof and all the different ways that you could put together social proof ads. So that's the ideation stage. Execution is what the term suggests, which is you just execute so that the ads are ready for launch. That's when the approval process is boiling and you know, we get the green light there. And then you launch and you move on to the analysis stage. So the analysis stage, you want to give it some time for statistical significance. And a lot of times that's probably around the 2-week period, sometimes even less, depending on the spend of, you know, for your ads. And then the result phase is when it gets fun. You get to dive in. We use motion software to kind of analyze the ads that we run. You'll start to see patterns that tends to start working for the ad angles that is speaking to the audience that you're targeting. So just within those 4 cycles, we rinse and repeat, you know, come up with a new theme based on the winning formulas or potentially even experimenting outside of your previous theme, and just keep at it until you combat ad fatigue. That's definitely the recipe to battle ad fatigue from settling in.
Awesome, man. I appreciate that. So with that one, next up we have, this is a huge mistake, not gififying your ads. I love that made up word as well. It's brilliant. Not gififying. We're going to have to make that a thing.
Just as simple as it could go, and very much, you know, you can understand exactly what we're trying to say here with not gififying your ads. And it's as plain as it is, right? Like if you have a variety of static ads ready to go, especially if you know that there are existing winning static ads, Patrick, there are so many ways now to just gifify your ads so quickly, efficiently, and so easily. Very cost-efficient ways to do so. We'll tell you, you know, we're not gatekeeping here. We use Jitter as a Figma plugin that does the job for you in a matter of like 1 minute to gifify these ads. So when you're looking at these examples of existing static ads that then just has motion introduced as a GIF, throw them out as a creative experimentation. You're creating more diversity for yourself. And the reason why this is aha moment number 3, and it's part of the top 5, is because it's such low lift and it gives you so much more to experiment with. And you just never know if GIF format is the format for you. If GIF format doesn't work, then simply trash it and potentially invest more dollars in static ads. But hey, if GIF ads are the ones really doubling conversion rates even, or tripling click-through rate, that's going to be your winning ad format to continually invest more dollars in. So gifify your ads. Low lift, potential high impact.
Yeah, that, you know, I'm thinking I have no GIFs running right now on KB's paid ads. So I need to fix that. I talk so much about eating our own dog food, and I'm like, I am not eating our own dog food on this one. But it's kind of interesting to me because I know right at the beginning of the call, you mentioned that you'd kind of like approach design and ads from a kind of psychological perspective. And I do wonder if that movement is huge, because movement really does attract the eye, you know, and this is like a crazy example, but it just came to me. I just thought, like, you know, I sat down the other day and I saw like a spider crawl across the wall and you can see that movement. I wonder if it's like playing into the same mechanism where you see something kind of like slide in and out of the screen. Right. And it's just more likely to grab your attention, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly that. And we'll tell you some, you know, secret sauce from behind the scenes. Oh, this tends to work from the multitudes of accounts that we've been involved in. This tends to work more so for lead generation, for B2B that are within industries that are like, not necessarily software, like industries that are outside of software. So if you're a software as a service, static ads may be your winning ad formula. But if you're a lead generation B2B business that are not software related, gift could actually be the way to go. And I think there's just a completely different audience for SaaS people, right? More of the technical minded people are very much straightforward and they just want to know, I guess, things in static. Just give it to me straight. Whereas, you know, the general audience for more of like an industry B2B side of the biz of things, I think motion is like, to your point, is what captures your attention. It creates more engagement. So, you know, obviously not everyone can invest in video ads. It's very high lift. It's not as cost efficient. You're probably having to hire extra hands for video ads. So, hey, find that in between. You can still create motion. You can still get this out the gate running with just gififying your static ads.
100%, dude. It just kind of looks cool as well and kind of adds to that creative diversity, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Cool. So next one, I feel like this is such a powerful technique and slash format that just gets aggressively overlooked. But lack of social proof is another big issue that creative B2B creative teams make.
And reason why this is top two as part of this top five is because, again, to my point of the war chest of ads that we introduced and social proof being one of the five angles that we typically cover, social proof more often than not is going to be the one that outperforms the other ad concepts. And reason being, right, it's just really within our human nature, we just tend to need that word of mouth trust, a verification from other users to just let us know that the product or service that you're selling actually does work, right? You go to Amazon, you're going to look at the star ratings. Like what is the review on this? If it's a 3 out of 5, I don't know. Maybe I'll look for a 4.5 out of 5 type of product. And then maybe you'll get even deeper and look into the comment section first before committing to a purchase. Exactly the same psychological reason for why you should promote more social proof ads. And there's so many different ways to do this, right? It doesn't have to necessarily be the typical classic testimonial quote. It could be a stat, like a statistic that you want to throw out. That acts as a social proof. It could be the partner logos. If you're a bigger company and you work with other enterprise partners as well, hey, slap them on. There was a winning ad that we saw. And the one that constantly won out the others was every time we just slapped on. Do you know that store? It's called Sur La Table. I don't really know how to say it.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's an email automation platform. What was the service itself? But one of the big accounts that this email automation software worked with was Sur La Table. And every time we just threw that out, you know, slap on that logo, that was enough to just outperform the other ads. And this happened week after week, month after month, and it still remains to be the top performing ad. So it just goes to show you the power of social proof. And now we can even get into more creative ways with mimicking like a Twitter X post that a verified user might say about your product or service. So lots of creative ways to do this. Again, going back to creative diversity, you could even diversify the way you do your social proof. Slap on that 5-star rating and you have yourself a super strong ad concept at the gates.
And I'm going to like double stamp that about getting the right partner logo onto an ad. I was working with a client last year and we had a lead gen, but it was like a demo generation campaign that we just couldn't get working. And so we launched some ads with Goldman Sachs was one of their clients.
Yeah.
And as soon as we put the Goldman Sachs logo on those ads, dude, leads just, they went wild. And it just reminded me, I think there's so much talk on social media these days about how I've almost heard this narrative that like creative and CRO, et cetera, is kind of table stakes and B2Bs really need to just invest in demand generation and brand. And I think that's true to some degree, that when you nail those things, it can really help. But man, making a small tweak like that on an ad, when you're looking at the data every single day, you really can see how much influence it can actually have, right?
Right. Absolutely. And people are getting even more creative, Patrick, with the way they're executing their social proof. There's this ad concept now. It's very fresh, but it's something I would love to start experimenting with. They call it negative ads. And what they do is they'll intentionally take a 1-star rating or review for their product amongst the many 5 stars that they have. And the 1-star is the one that they would promote as an ad, really to just be, you know, cheeky with it and really create that scroll stopping attention grab.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you don't want our product, you know, here's a 1-star review. But again, psychologically, with sort of that reverse psychology, I'd rather say, it creates that engagement level and really hooks you in and makes you curious, like, oh, what is this product all about that they would promote a 1-star rating, right? So it gets really fun when you get really into it.
Yeah, I wonder if we should try that at Client
Let's
Boost.
Go.
Dude, I actually saw recently, so I know, like, this is a B2B conversation, but I feel like B2B should take some inspiration from B2C anyway. It's definitely typically much more creative. But I saw a similar ad style from Liquid Death, where what they did was took like 100 negative reviews. Also, I could be talking shit, but like a decent number of negative reviews and turned it into a song. and then had somebody just like sing this song of the negative reviews. Yeah, it's crazy.
I love that. I really wonder how that performs. I bet engagement was up for sure.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the level of wild that we want to get to at some point, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome, man. Well, with that, we're getting onto the last point. This one is definitely my favorite one, that I know you've been talking a lot about on social media lately, but protecting the brand too much. What does that look like?
Yeah, you and I have talked about this at length. And I'm so glad that we're coming into a world where we're beginning to embrace more of the unpolished ads, more of the ugly ads, whatever you want to call it, lo-fi. But what we start to see now is this shift in speaking more to a current audience, maybe more so a younger audience as well. But if your target audience is going to be more of the younger tech-savvy sort of audience, you want to start investing in more lo-fi ads. You know, I think a lot of times one of the most common B2B mistake that we see is that they don't want to steer away from their brand guideline by for any reason, you know? And so that kind of puts a chokehold in really how much more you could be getting in performance lift if you had just invested a little bit more on unpolished ads. We have subconscious ad blocker, Patrick, that, you know, we see ads so rampant nowadays that as soon as we detect them, we sense just the smell of ads, we tend to scroll right past, right? Don't give it a second thought. It becomes like a second nature to us nowadays. So by just, you know, making your ads more lo-fi, more relatable, something more like you, something you see in your iPhone, that now is what's becoming the scroll stopper, you know, intentional ugliness. Again, reverse psychology, maybe at work here, but this is what we see rising to the top, and this is becoming the ad concept that is outperforming all the other ads. And it's making sense because if you look at even the big companies like McDonald's, Wendy's, Duolingo, even all their campaigns now, go on their Instagram, go on whatever they're advertising in social, it's all ugly ads. They're meme ads. They're just very lo-fi ads, things that you know that they probably hired like a Gen Z to do their marketing for them, obviously, right? But it takes a Gen Z to attract other Gen Zs, you know? And so, yeah, get into ugly, lo-fi, unpolished ads. Don't protect your brand too much, because at the end of the day, what do you care about? More money in the door or just, you know, protecting the brand?
Yeah, for sure. Dude, I'm feeling so bad here, because this is another ad format that we're just not running yet on the LinkedIn channel, but I can see so much potential in it. So it's another one that I'm going to go away and think, yeah, man, we need to apply that one. I'm also thinking maybe the next strategic hire for us is we've got to get some like Gen Z blood into the marketing team at KV.
Exactly. And I'm lucky to be working, I believe, with a Gen Z as one of our creative strategists on our team. So they tend to have the mind for it as well, you know, and I'm learning from them, knowing that I'm a millennial myself. But I'll throw in this argument as well. I don't believe that investing in these type of ads actually destroy your brand. I think it actually helps to elevate it, because then, you know, you're like say when Duolingo, I don't know if you heard of this viral thing that came out with Duolingo, but they introduced this concept behind the death of Duo, which is their owl mascot. And man, it just blew up. They did this in a very just like ugly ad format, right? Even the campaign itself is humorous, it's comical. And it's really just to get aroused from the audience. And man, Duolingo just really made the headlines, because they're really tapping into that outside the box psychology where it's like, oh, this isn't anything that I've seen before. Like this is like fresh and new. And that's exactly what the idea behind unpolished lo-fi ads are. People nowadays would use the concept of the UGC itself. It's super unpolished. It's super lo-fi. It's not anything cinematic. Anything that you can shoot with the iPhone is what's going to outperform the others. And that's so antithetic. It's the antithesis of what we used to know works, right? Back then, it was the commercials, the top dollar cinematic sort of a feel that really grabbed the attention. But now it's not. It's the very low cost efficient lo-fi ads that are working. So hey, all more the more power to these businesses that don't need to invest top dollar in these ads, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I would say one other thing, a style that I've seen, actually, I'm thinking back to lo-fi, that's worked quite well on some B2B clients that I've worked with over the last 6 months, is to just, especially if you're like a B2B SaaS, is to just load up Loom, go into the product, and then just talk about one specific product feature. And you've literally just got the product there, that you've got your browser open, and then just this little circle. Like, it looks super lo-fi, but I've seen those drive crazy lead volumes, like, and engagement rates like off the charts compared to a standard single image ad, because it does just kind of stand out a little bit more and look a little bit more authentic and like something you would, I mean, when you combine that with like the thought leader ad type as well, which really doesn't look like an ad, then it can perform crazy good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, our winning secret tools have been a Sharpie and a paper lately, Patrick. I mean, you see some of the examples here in front of you. We've run so many of those ads, you wouldn't believe, but those tend to be the one that wins out the others. So don't protect your brand too much. And what we mean by that is invest in experimenting outside the box with more lo-fi, unpolished, ugly ads.
Yeah, that's it. You need the mix, right? You got to have both. All about that creative diversity, I guess.
Absolutely.
Awesome, man. Well, Beav, we're getting to the end here. So a few tactical takeaways for the audience. These are just kind of from my head here. So number one, if you're running offer ads to landing pages, always got to make sure that the ad offer and messaging actually matches the landing page. Otherwise, potentially, you know, you can either spook people when they land there and then they'll just bounce, or two, you know, they were just expecting something different and they just feel either bait and switched or cheesed off or whatever the case may be. The other one, just like, don't be afraid of those kind of like faithful, tried and tested ads, like the social proof one to improve trust. I know you also talked about that kind of war chest of ads where we develop like, you know, features and benefits, etc., that kind of stuff. And then also the last one that we were just talking about, man, like consistent branding is important, but so is standing out in the field, in the feed, like need to be balancing both there. So don't be afraid to chuck that brand rule book out the window and do some ugly ads.
That's an ugly ads.
Yeah, exactly, man. Any final words from you, Beav?
Yeah, I think just the key takeaway is you'd be surprised at how much ad creatives can do good for your account. Invest in ad creatives, really camp there and spend some time to really polish that up, because oftentimes you'll see that everyone's trying to fix their websites, their landing page experience, but not even put any thought into the ad creatives that they're running. It's an entire world. We're just really scratching the surface with this top five. There's so much more into this that we could expand on. We could go on for hours on end. So invest in ad creatives. Key takeaway.
Beav, you just signed yourself up for additional podcasts. I'll definitely be I'll be inviting you again. Thanks a lot, dude. I appreciate you, man.
Yes.
Cheers.